Call the meeting to order. We're hoping that Deb may be able to make it. I understand she had an injury and may be a little bit slow getting across town today, but we'd like to go ahead and start with our agenda. So let me call us to order and ask Stephanie to take the role, please.
Joyce Dill.
Here.
Deb Rouche. Mike Smith.
Here.
Sue Suter. Phil Kryne.
Here. Any additions or changes to the agenda? Okay, hearing none, we'll assume that the agenda is approved as written. We now have time for citizen input, public participation, so please state your name and more or less where you're from. We don't need the details of the address, and we appreciate it.
I'm Barb Jewett from Mohammed, and I am very pleased to tell the board that your first Scylla home is now occupied as of Monday, September 21st. My son was the first client to officially sign his paperwork. And there are three young men, ages 19, 23, and 25, living in the house. There is a fourth bedroom, and IAG is still working on identifying the appropriate client for that fourth bedroom. Latest word is that they think they may have found someone. So we'll see what happens, but the plan is that eventually there will be a fourth person in the home. And everyone is thrilled and very happy, and we thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much for that news. That's tremendous information. Any other public participation this morning? Going once? Yes. Okay. You may have to remind me, but that's fine. All right. Well, hearing none, we'll go on ahead. The Mental Health Board minutes are provided in your packet for information. And I encourage you to take a look at those and raise any questions you might have on them. Now we come to approval of our own minutes, which begin here on page 7. And I would like to have any edits or a motion to accept those minutes, please.
I move to accept.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, minutes are approved as presented. Now it's time for comments from me. First of all, I've heard that two of our board members have had health issues this week, so that's why we're a little bit thin, and I certainly have best wishes for them. Secondly, I think our early activities this term will be to really establish priorities for the coming year, work hard on integration, and of course the one thing in the background that has happened since then that all of us know about is the state of Illinois has done more than drop the ball. I think they've put the ball on a safe and crushed it. And I think that many of our agencies are struggling mightily just to keep their doors open and continue to function. And it's going to be very difficult for us as a board with our limited resources to see what we can do with that. But certainly there will be some discussion about what we can do in terms of making sure that there's a safety net or at least a foundation to make sure that we don't end up losing some of the gains that we've made over many, many years. Very challenging. And I know that there have been some very active interventions in Springfield. I believe there were some meetings even last night, and I know there's some things scheduled for next week. Trying to get people's attention. It's been a very strange uphill battle over the last several months, and it appears that it's not going to get better before it gets worse. And that's one of the things that we as a board we'll have to think about also in terms of the long-term implications, not just of the nature of the state support, but of how we create innovative programs and move forward, as we all know that the community needs to, in light of extremely limited resource bases. So these kinds of trade-offs are not things that we want to face, but certainly we're being forced to. I'm happy to hear the news about the local SILAs, and I'll ask Peter to give us a little bit more about that. And we will certainly have a lot of public participation and discussion about our planned priorities for the coming year. So with that said, let me turn it over to Peter.
At the county board hearing last night, there was testimony from a couple of agencies concerning the budget situation in Springfield. And of course, everybody here knows what's happening with that. And, you know, I think that really makes what we do here in the county critical and heightens the importance of our work. In my experience in state government before I came here, with the Department of Mental Health and Children and Family Services, and also the Division of Developmental Disabilities, we had never experienced until 2008, there really was never a real cut in the amount of money that went to the service providers, the budgets. The worst they were what they used to call maintenance of efforts budgets, which were essentially flatline, which is a net loss anyway, but this current situation is just absolutely abysmal, and we will do whatever we can as a board to assist the agencies. One of the things that we have available to us is the possibility of doing some advance payments to help agencies with cash flow. Of course, we are limited by the fiscal year of the county. Like for example, we were doing cash payments now, we could only go through December, but after December, we do typically have a little more money this time of year to kind of carry us through to when the tax levy money comes. So to the extent we can be of help, agencies need to let us know, and we will do what we can. Barb Jewett said, her son and two others are in the one of the SILAs. The second SILA is ready to go, and they have the people lined up for that, so things are moving. The trend to four-person or less SILAs is happening here in Champaign County. DSC is opening a four-person house in Mahomet, and has also, you have two other ones, Dale, in addition to that, I believe, that have less than four people. So, I mean, that's sort of the gold standard that we want to move toward, and the full community integration. So we're excited that we're seeing movement in this area at this point. It's good for families, you know, to keep. I think we a couple of years ago said that we felt it was important that any person that's from Champaign County should be served here in Champaign County. They shouldn't be shipped off to Chicago or someplace hundreds of miles away. So we're glad that this is happening. That's about all I have.
Okay, thank you very much. Lynn, can you go over the staff materials and some of the other things you have in your report?
Well, I had to write the staff report before we went to the ACMI conference last week, and a lot of what I learned there kind of found a way to put some of what I've been learning together as a result of that meeting isn't included in here, but what is included in here is the most recent PUNS report for Champaign County. We had, I know that that's probably a lot to hit you with every month, and the list was getting really long, so I just, for the list of comparison throughout time, I pulled out several months and just started looking at maybe twice a year, once a year. But I think if this data is valuable to you, even though it changes quite slowly, I can continue to include it and summarize it. So the needs, according to PUNS, you know, have changed very slowly. We have asked for some input from the PASS agents, who are the people who manage the PUNS enrollment locally, specifically on what they see of crisis cases. I think that's become a really important issue to you over the last few months. So at the retreat, hopefully they will be able to speak to what they see beyond what the data reflect here about critical needs and urgent needs and complex cases. Fingers crossed they think they can do that. So maybe hopefully we've given them enough time to do that. Some of the other things that are included in here are typically ongoing projects. So what I think is important to share with you from our ACMI conference last week was not so much, there was a really wonderful training, several of us were there, a couple of board members were also there for the training on performance measures, and this is, you know, the overall system, like it starts with how the health system and behavioral health and DD systems have changed already and will continue to transform very quickly in the next few years as a result of new federal rules, but also how unmanageable the measures part is. 2,500 different measures are used by HHS, so that's impossible for providers. It's also pretty clear that while providers may diligently record and report on all the measures they're required to, nothing else happens with them. So I think the project that we're involved with agencies and the U of I to sort of look at what we do internally and what we require of the agencies is very timely. And Dr. Manderscheid gave us a very nice context for doing that work. So that part is important. But related to the comments that you've made about the state, I think that the budget impasse, while ridiculous and a bigger catastrophe than we've ever seen in Illinois, isn't the only problem that we have. Whether it's because the state agencies aren't staffed adequately or the political changes keep disrupting the work, the state of Illinois, while paying, you know, while we citizens pay federal taxes, is not taking advantage of really important opportunities. For example, the 1115 is just sitting there. It's not, maybe not ready to be submitted, but nothing is happening. There's no further revisions are even being discussed. So that's just sitting there because it's trapped by politics. The balancing incentive program dollars, which are federal dollars, which had been available, they would have been available until the end of this month. The federal government gave Illinois an extension of 2 years. That money's just sitting there. So locally, that's important because DSC and Community Choices were awarded a $200,000 grant to do that employment-forced work with a very challenging population. That's something I think that's of interest to this board, and I think we were all quite proud of their work, and then it just disappeared. But that grant should become available. But again, everything is in stuck status, so hopefully it will get spent before 2 years are up. Also, Illinois has made no effort to apply for DSRIP funding, which is a way of taking, we spend a lot of money on institutionalization and other really high cost services that there are known more economical ways to do it. So a DSRIP grant would allow the state to try some demonstration projects that have been effective elsewhere and use the savings and, you know, to support those. So that time, very timely, but nothing's happening with that. The Employment First Task Force, which Dale Morrissey is a member of, and I'm one of several people who sit on the calls and have applied to be a member, but there have been no appointments for over 2 years, even though there are vacancies. The strategic plan was submitted at the end of last year. It's also just sitting there. And that's timely because of the recent settlement with Oregon, which was a very aggressive consent decree or settlement agreement from the Department of Justice. And that is the direction that the whole system is very likely to go. And similarly, the new settings regulations within HCBS, a transition plan was submitted in March. The federal government has finally responded to the state of Illinois' plan to transition to more integrated settings, but the response was very nicely written, but more information is needed. So we just kind of wait for action. So it's really important that there's no money, but it's also really important that there's no activity And there's all kinds of potential to keep, to stay caught up and even get ahead of the new requirements. And I think that's as challenging a problem. That's a problem that's going to live with us for a long time. So, thanks.
Well, let me add one thing to that. We exchanged several emails during the week about the Oregon issue. Oregon actually has been considered to be one of the leading states, actually, on integration and employment activities for quite a while. And I'm sure it was no accident that the federal government went after them. I think they're kind of hoping that some other states, like some that we know, will hear that message before the hammer comes down. And Oregon actually has made some significant changes to its programs based on a federal consent arrangement that actually will significantly improve that. And I think there are some national model activities that we need to be looking at. We did see a couple of emails from some of our commentators asking what they were doing about a few of the peripheral issues. One, for example, was transportation. You know, these are things that continue to be on our list of how to make integration and community transformation and improvement, you know, how to really bring those about, and the idea of off-employment programming and other activities for people certainly was one that wasn't addressed very much. Transportation was another. I don't think it's fair to say that those weren't in there at all, but I think it is fair to say that they really are not part of the legal basis for the federal government to pursue things. And I think in Champaign County, we actually have some interesting opportunities, for example, in transportation. I think we have a fairly robust special recreation activity that can be used to some degree for some of the off-hours programming. But, you know, all things being normal, which obviously none of them are, we would have some really interesting models that we could begin to build on under the circumstances. But right now, I think we're just treading water. So that's the hard part.
There was an exchange earlier this week, and I thought that so one of the people who does Oregon DD services is our colleague from the National Association, and we had a meeting on Tuesday afternoon, but and she was on the call, but unfortunately there was no opportunity to ask her how they're going to deal with some of the concerns that keep coming up, or what do people do for the other 20 hours of their week, the non-work activities. So that's an important question to her, and she has ideas. She knew that Oregon was going to be made an example of when we talked in July. But on Tuesday, we couldn't talk about it because we had a presentation about the WIOA law, which is interesting. And it was a very candid presentation about how much, how this really just loads a It's good. The promises are wonderful of the new WIOA, but it also loads the VR teams with almost impossible to meet requirements. So we were sort of focused on that and didn't get around to, like, how is Sarah Jane going to deal with this? This isn't just a philosophical issue. What do people do with the rest of their week? And this is a shut front door, so if people leave the sheltered workshop for community employment, they can't come back. So if they lose that job, they're not able to come back. So these are important questions. I hope she'll tell us how they deal with it before we have to deal with it.
Okay, thank you. Now we have time on our agenda for agency information. Unless there, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Joyce.
One of the things that I am is pragmatic, and unfortunately, I don't see how we can possibly address any of these new things without the money. It let's face it, our agencies are hurting. And for us to say that, yes, we want these things is fine, but when it comes down to where the money goes, there has to be some way that pressure can be put upon the state. I don't know what they are. I would like to look into it. It seems to me that we're talking about something that everyone knows needs to be done, but nobody's doing it. And because nobody's doing it, services are getting less and less. And then because services are getting less and less, families are having more difficulties taking care of their children, adult children as well as young children. And there's no outcry. I don't see it. So what can we do? I think we need to be talking about something like that. When we talk about sheltered workshops and we talk about transportation and we talk about all the other things that we talk about, the truth is that there are people behind those things. And you can't just say, well, they're not giving us the money, therefore we can't do this, so we're going to do nothing. I don't know what we can do, but certainly we could have a discussion about that. And when we have our retreat, that may be something that we need to do. We may need to invite other people to come to that retreat to actually address our questions. Why aren't you doing anything about this? And I would like to see that happen. So any way I can help that way, I will.
Most of the new rulings that I referred to relate to non-residential settings and non-residential activities. But for the state of Illinois, there was a really nice Scylla rates review report recently, and we haven't talked about residential for a while, but it addresses that very important issue that there's nothing for people, at least right now, between the home-based support, which is maybe 15 hours of support a week, is that right? 15 hours? I mean, it's not. To 24-hour, 7 days a week, Scylla, and that it would, you know, really be quite easy and could save lots and lots of money to give families and individuals some options in between those two levels of support. So that was one of the recommendations. There were a lot of other interesting recommendations in the report, but some of them were transitional, like it was to lower all the rates instead of, right, but there's a logic for that. But the problem is if they start to do that, then the second phase has to happen. And I think no one in this room should trust that if one thing happens, the second thing is ever gonna happen. So I think that's, probably everyone has cold feet around doing anything with Scylla regulations, but that would, if the whole thing were able to be followed through, it would save money and give people a care that's not overwhelming. So, and let more people in.
I believe that, but I also see that when we start talking about doing something a little bit different, you're talking about staff, paying for staff. There we go again. The staff is not paid enough because there's not enough money. You lose staff, then you lose service, and it's just the spiral down, and something has to stop it. So if it's going to be lobbying, I don't care what it is, we need to start doing it. We need to really think about that. And when we do our retreat, I would really like to talk about that.
I think also when we have the retreat, it's going to be incumbent upon us as a board to determine how we're going to go forward, because I think we're going to have to set some priorities. At least let our agencies know what areas we think are important and how we would like to continue to spend the county's money that's been given to us to oversee. I understand every dollar you put somewhere that it isn't today, you're taking some kind of service away from a client that already exists. But it's also, we're between a rock and a hard place too, because we're going to have to expand what we are going to see you agencies provide for the clients, because the law is going to force us all in that direction. And if we don't, as a board, set some priorities and some guidelines, I think we'll end up having to make decisions at the end that everybody doesn't understand if we haven't communicated those. So.
Well, let me add that I think there are you know, not to be Pollyannish about it, but I think that there are plenty of case studies with some of these states that say that once you get there, so to speak, the costs are lower per person, but, you know, it's not free to get there. There's a considerable, you know, as Joyce has pointed out, there's a very non-trivial expense of creating and implementing the change. And during that time, you're spending you need to be spending extra money, which has to come from somewhere. And if somehow you can bank it against the future savings, that's wonderful. At this point, we don't have that freedom at all. And it's extremely difficult. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. Any more comments, questions? All right, thanks, Lynn, very much. We now have time for agency information, if any agencies would like to report.
I have Patty Walters at DSC. A couple of things that I just wanted to mention this morning. I hope we could kind of turn the tide here.
We appreciate that.
we'll decide that at the end, whether or not we feel good about it, but I think so. Lynn has and Stephanie had recently done site visits at DSC, lots and lots of activity, lots of involvement. The connections with our staff is always appreciated, and I think it was a really thorough review of all the programs, the cultural plan, which, you know, has evolved over the years. I remember the days, and some of us were here then, at least all the staff, I think, when Dr. Carl Bell was introduced many, many years ago when we used to have the meetings at the terminal. But, you know, that process has evolved and it, you know, the work has been recognized and, you know, Chandra has brought some, a format to it that allows for us to really kind of see the activities and the progress that's being made. And so that's been appreciated. So I just wanted to recognize the effort that went into the site visits. I wanted to also just demonstrate, I think sometimes we talk a lot in here about gaps in service and how you guys are attempting to put resources into that. And there was a recent example locally where I exchanged some emails with the director of special education at Unit 4 who had a family that was in crisis. Also exchanged a couple emails with Linda. And this family and the system got caught between the child is funded by ISBE, receive SILA services. So DHS couldn't touch it. So, you know, there were several layers of kind of bureaucracy that got in the way of a crisis, I think. We were asked if we could provide some emergency respite for the family, and we're unable to do that. And I think that was a source of frustration because it was considered to be a gap. One, I'm not real sure what happened. Supposedly the child was turned out of a SILA placement with little or no notice, which is, you know, I can't imagine that. I think even legally you have to give at least 60 days notice for that. But we weren't, you know, we would need to be able to prove that all state funding was exhausted. ISBE's primarily responsible, and our respite program went away July 1st. So that doesn't sound very positive. Here's the spin. What has happened since we lost our respite funding is that our individual and family support funding that you fund has been able to identify a couple of people that were gonna be in a pretty critical hardship with the loss of respite and be able to offer some support. You know, we had allocations already out for the first quarter because there's lots of families that depend on those services and got extensions into the new fiscal year, but being able to identify a few of those families and offer some services is because of DDB funding. And so I wanted to make sure that you guys get to hear a little bit of that when it happens too. So thank you for at least allowing us to balance that for a couple of families. When you speak to how cost-effective respite at the state level is a really inexpensive way to support families and keep them from having to place their loved ones in higher cost care. It serves lots of people. We had 60 to 65 families that received respite annually. And it gets threatened every single year. This is the first time there's actually been an interruption in service, and it doesn't look good. So that, you know, that is a crisis, that is a problem for people. It doesn't compare to what's happening with the mental health services, but it does affect a lot of families, you know, in Champaign County, and we are able to at least preserve some services for a few people through the IFS program. Dunbar Silla, I just wanted to give an update on that. Congratulations on the new home and the placement for your son. That's really good to see that coming to life. We have hired the third LPN. I think we have mentioned to all of you that the hardship has been nursing support. We have one individual that requires, you know, we have to have a nurse on staff, an LPN on staff from, I think it's 7 a.m. until 11 p.m. daily. And so that's been a hardship, securing nursing. That's a crisis in the state and the country anyway. But we have hired the third LPN, which allows us to plan for the opening. She starts in mid-October. We have, we're in the process of scheduling the licensure visit with DHS, so that's the last thing we need to do in terms of licensing. The home is otherwise ready. We have a house manager identified and need to hire a few staff once the LPN is on board. So we're excited about that, and you know, it would be great at the next meeting to be able to maybe give you a date for that. So employment first, Annette's going to speak to that during the transition agenda item, but I just wanted to let you know that in light of the conversation that we've also been hearing about this morning, that with all the things that the feds are mandating and the consent decrees and the laws and, you know, for Oregon and stuff, one of the key things that's missing is the businesses. The business buy-in is critical. So you guys are investing in that through this Employment First grant. That is, like we talked about, that's more of an infrastructure to move us forward. There's a lot of activity happening, and we're excited about really being able to focus on that part. I'd like to think that when the state does decide to come, you know, when they do decide to come to Illinois and turn the light switch off, that they will at least be impressed with what's happening and that we're moving in the right direction and can maybe set the stage for some positive changes. So I'm gonna let Annette speak to that more, but I just wanted to recognize that through IFS and through Employment First, there are some really good things happening because of what this board is funding. So thank you.
Thanks, Patty. Other agencies? Sure, Dale, that's fine.
Thank you. The other thing is, want to let you know there is a thing called the Life Skills Project, Lifespan Project that Patty's been very, very involved. That is a state project. Sometime we should give you a study. She can give you a lot better than I can, but it talks about what's going on there as far as changing the system. Director Fenton, Director of Developmental Disabilities, this was his baby. He really wants it to happen. He appointed a person who was leading that for about 6 months. And she's now moving to a different department, so it's going to have a possibly a little bit of a setback, but it really has some significant opportunities to change the system, particularly to make sure people have, to get rid of some of the things when people are coming through the system to get to the right place and for the choice and all that stuff.
Doesn't it use some of the money to make some needed changes in infrastructure?
Yes. And again, Patty can speak a lot more to the different committees, and I think before she left, Darlene Klopel was involved in one of the other committees on that. And so there's a lot of representation in Champaign County, and it has significant positive impact for changing the system. As Lynn told you, I am serving on the Employment First Task Force. Two major challenges with that. The new governor has given no recognition to that committee at all at this point in time. Applied basically no resources to that as far as support and staff. We continue to move along. We did get an extension for as far as submitting the state plan support, but that's moving along. And again, a lot of challenges there. I serve on a couple committees of that too. And for example, one of them, there's some that are really concerned with state use. Like state use is the set aside contracts. Does that perpetuate people being in congregated settings? But how you move away from that when it's creating hundreds of jobs right now. And for example, some of them are greater than minimum wage. And so how do we do that? How do we not, how do we change the system but not throw the baby away with the bath? And so those are some challenges we're dealing with. And the final thing I want to talk about is, I was recently appointed a few months ago. There's a thing called the Innovative and Flexible Day Program Services Committee. There's several of us around the state working with the Department of DD to talk about how we can get around some of the limitations that keep us from doing more innovative and flexible things in the community. And so we've actually taken a draft and we've taken what's called All Rule 115, which deals with day programming stuff, and we're working on doing a whole rewrite. And it looks like it's turned it all upside down. So there's progress being made. It's just when those things get done, will they buy off on them? You know, they've given us, hey, yes, we want to hear it, give it to us, do it. But now when we show them and we take their old document and there's only a few pieces of it left, are they going to accept that? So I just want to tell you there's a lot of positive things going that we're not just working at the local level, but the state level to try to get that changed. So thank you.
Okay, and I assume that at some level there's an opportunity to pilot things as well, right? I mean, obviously the controversy of making wholesale change can be painful, but one can suggest, you know, let's try this activity out in this particular region or whatever.
Yeah, and some of it's already happening, Phil. It is happening. The one thing I don't like, there's a group called Unlicensed Day Program Providers. And what Unlicensed Day Program Provider, that's like saying Barb, as a parent, would go out and say, I'm going to do day programming with a couple of the parents. That's a different model, and the key, only thing you have to do is make sure that you're meeting the standards. And so we need to legitimize that's okay, but how do you do that and move that forward? So there's some models happening. I want to pursue, you said Park District. There's models going on in the state where they're blending the services of DSC with the Park District better than we're doing at this point in time, and we want to pursue that. It's just we got to get there.
All right, thanks. Patty, you wanted to add something? Go ahead.
Yeah, just when you mentioned the pilot, there is through the Life Choices Initiative. I'm on Team 5, which is about quality services, and we currently have a pilot project out right now with 6 state ISC agencies. And the intent is we drafted a new visit note and interview form, which gets used for quarterly visits, and the shift is for that to be more about quality and personal satisfaction for the individuals that are receiving the services. In the past, a lot of that seemed to be more focused on how the agency is doing and not how the individual is doing. So the pilot is happening right now. The feedback is due by mid-October to our team, So what happened is that there were 6 statewide agencies through ISCs that are identified. They each identified 1 or 2 providers to participate, and then each of those providers selected 5 families to pilot the form on to say, are we asking the right questions? You know, is this what we're looking for? Is this the direction we're going? It's a little bit ahead of the game of one of the teams is charged with the individual profile, which is supposed to kind of really help outline what the plan is for the person. So while it sounds a little bit backwards, we want to make sure, are we asking the right questions? Are we getting at what we want to? And that feedback is going to come from parents, providers, ISC agencies, and then that data will be collected through the consultant at the national level through NAD that's kind of spearheading it. So it is exciting to finally have that product out. We've been working on it for a little bit over a year. I just sent an email out yesterday asking everybody to check in and let us know how it's going. It's very time consuming, but it's a lot of the things that we're doing is. I mean, a lot of the transition stuff that you're talking about is time consuming because you're learning and you're also trying to maintain services at a certain level while you're trying these new things. So it's consistent with the stuff we're doing with CQL and with this pilot where they're going out. It's taking a couple hours longer than it usually does to do these visits, which is a hardship on the staff and the families. But the long-term goal is that we will work differently, not harder. So there's a lot of fun activity that's going on with the Life Choices Initiative.
All right. Thank you very much. Other agencies, any other information? Okay, let's go on. I think the next thing on our agenda is the financial report and approval of monthly claims. And any discussion, can I hear a motion?
I move that we accept.
I second.
Okay, any further discussion? Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Okay, the claims are accepted. New business. I've asked to have a summary of the agency contracts as they've been coming together. There is a summary included, and Peter, you want to walk us through some of this?
Yeah, just real quickly. Basically, every contract that was approved by the board in May, the contracts have been negotiated and executed, and we have a summary that begins on page 21. Do you want to walk through them all?
Let's walk through them very quickly. You know, to the extent, did they match the original amount, or were there any substantive changes? You know, where are we headed on each one of these?
These include the mental health board investments in DD services. I thought it should all.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, then you might. If you can remember the actual numbers, tell us the DD board numbers as well.
Go ahead, Lynn.
As we go through this.
I'll let.
The numbers of the original requests?
And where we are now.
Yeah, there are only a few that vary from the request. So just so you know, I didn't give you a key, sorry to say. So when you look through these, there are utilization targets, which are, that's the primary way that we look at a program's success. TPC means treatment plan client. NTPC means non-treatment plan client. I did not break out new versus continuing in any of these, but most of the programs have separate goals for new and continuing. I thought just volume was probably the most important. CSE means community service event, and SC is service contact. So those, as you go through it, those are used repeatedly. So the first application is for the amount requested. The services have been adjusted a little bit. We also asked this year, Down Syndrome Network made a change last year in what they were reporting. We asked for the same change this year from Autism, which was not a headcount of people at all the gigantic events. The events are very successful, but they're not uniquely supported by DDB dollars. So we wanted to see more information about the families that are involved consistently and then the families that are involved just once in a while. And so community service event is still a measure of outreach because it's counting events. So those were the major changes. I let them know that advocacy, especially at the IEP level, was very important. And both of these organizations have the ability to do some peer mentoring and support. So hopefully those opportunities are available to them this year. So no changes really at all in the CTF Illinois Nursing. It's a fairly small grant. There's a range of service contacts there, 240 to 300 service contacts, and that's because it's expressed differently in two different places in the application. But I figured that's low or high, that's a pretty good range for seven people. Down Syndrome Network is as last year with the emphasis that we just talked about. The Head Start, Early Head Start program, that's been funded by the Mental Health Board for a couple of years. It comes back to your portfolio this year. That one is, this is the amount they requested, but this is an increase over last year. This is in response to the increased need that was expressed in the application and then after the application by the program manager and the program director, who are very concerned about the changing needs of very young children in this community. I've also heard about that from the director of DSC's children's program. So and we also have talked about it at the Birth to Six Council, so I think that this approach may be real important.
Okay, and that amount is the DD amount or the MHP amount?
MHP doesn't invest anything now. This is entirely a DDB investment.
Okay, thank you.
They changed the focus a little bit from previous years to because they're unable to do so much. It's one staff person essentially, and she's unable to do so many community presentations. And that decision that Head Start had made was that's not as important as serving the kids. So.
Okay.
A little bit of a shift.
I know we're going to push our time here, but certainly if any of the board members have questions on any of these as we go through where the amount came from and how we're setting it up, by all means, okay, please
chime
in.
We could just do it that way. You could ask questions.
Well, I would like to touch on each of them very, very quickly. So, for example, let's go ahead to the Regional Planning Commission. That is the DD amount, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the new programs we had picked up, I remember.
Head Start? Or the next one?
Next one.
Yeah, the next one is a new program. And this is only funded by the DDB. And this did shift from application to, they revised the program plan and we had some discussions because it was very important to support, to focus more on getting people eligible and providing intensive case management for those who needed it. That was... seen as an important service gap. So the data collection piece is also important, but not as much of a focus now.
Okay, and then Community Choice and Community Living is an MHB mm-hmm. activity, so it's there for information. Mm-hmm. In fact, let's. I think we won't totally skip them if anybody has any questions, but we'll go past to the next DD one, which I think is Community Elements, right?
It is, and this is the amount requested, but it's lower than they had requested last year because they're one of the functions is to connect people to Medicaid benefits, and he's been successful in doing that. When people have Medicaid, then they are able to use Medicaid-funded services if those are available. So we know that Community Elements is now having trouble providing those services too. The waiting list for psychiatric is closed. So I don't know if that will impact the performance of this program this year, but the lower amount was a reflection of its success last year. So.
Yeah, I think that we've heard that Community Elements is one of the providers that's kind of at risk right now.
Very much so. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Could I ask, I think it's going to be really important that we look at, are the people being served that we expected to be served? The double designation.
Yes.
And that, to me, will be the deciding factor as to whether or not we go ahead and refund.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. They do meet the eligibility criteria here. And some of them then can become eligible for DHS DD-funded services.
Yeah, good point. So, let's see, Apartment Services, DSC, I think is the next one.
Mm-hmm. That's essentially the same as last year. Same amount and same performance level.
Okay, let's continue.
Clinical is the same amount, but there was an adjustment in the utilization targets expected, and that's attributed to they're investing more in longer-term services and less in the short-term, less expensive services, so they will, by definition, be able to serve fewer people. The longer-term services are counseling and psychiatric, but I think the growth is more in counseling. I hope I'm not misspeaking. They're here. They could.
Yeah, but as okay. I say, I okay. mean, we don't have a lot of choice here. Right. We've got to run through fairly quickly.
Community employment
if we really screw it up, I'm sure that they'll chime in.
Hopefully they would jump up. Community employment is a slightly larger investment than last year, reflecting the priorities of the board. Connections is the same as last year. I think the targets are also the same. Employment First is a new program. That's the collaboration with Community Choices. It's a fairly small investment, but this is not the Employment First project, which was going to target very high support need people. This is targeting people who may have already expressed an interest in working in the community, and it focuses on businesses and changing the culture. So,
right. But I think part of the hope was to leverage with that other activity, which of course right now is on hold.
Right.
So we need to be right. cognizant of that.
Right, and that's where the culture change will matter a lot, because people with significant disabilities are, you know, not expected to turn up serving you coffee or whatever. So I think that it'll be wonderful if that other does get turned on and then these projects can work together. This is a 2-year contract, so the amount of the contract is actually $160,000, but that's for the 2-year period. The Children's Family Development Center is the children's program. The amount of the request and the amount of the award are the same, and they're the same as last year, and the targets are the same. Individual and Family Support has been moved to the Mental Health Board side. I think the amount is greater than last year's award. I'm not sure. I think it's
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Integrated and site-based services, Community First, that's also a two-year contract. That's one where there was a revision from the application. The revision was to incorporate quarterly measures of integration. And those are, this work is pretty linked with the CQL work that they're doing too, so. And I think the targets stayed the same. Service coordination is the same amount. There is a mistake. I made a mistake on this one. It says 390 targeted treatment plan clients, but that's for the whole program. I should have put 305. Then the PACE, Opportunities for Independence, that's a larger award than last year, but it's lower than requested. And that's really the hope was to get that program back to, or to make it more vibrant than it has been. So the numbers, I think, remain, the target numbers remain as last year, but I think we all have a hope that they'll exceed those targets. And then the finally, UCP's vocational services is the same amount as requested last year, actually, I think the targets are adjusted. I can't remember.
Okay, so if you can, I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you can kind of summarize the total and compare it to the allocation, I mean, are we at 100% allocated? Is there anything
yes.
left? How are we doing?
And everything, well, with the exception of, other than PACE not getting what they had requested, everything that was requested was awarded. So that was, it was kind of nice to be able to do that. I think, is that right? Are we at 100%?
Yeah, we're at 100%. We basically did everything that was approved.
Okay.
Yeah. So there isn't any extra money laying around.
Right, so the challenge, of course, goes both ways. We don't have an extra pool of money to backstop things, and I think that will have to become a discussion item as well.
I think that we heard that you will have a little bit more money next year. Is that right, Pete?
Yeah.
That's expecting a bump.
A little bit of a bump.
Okay. Any other questions on the contract situations? Yeah, Michael.
So what you're really telling us is there is no contingency left in the budget for assistance with, as you were talking about earlier, with for agencies. If we're going to be able to help, it's going to have to come from something that we've already committed to.
Other than advanced funding.
Right.
But that's right.
Well, even advanced fund, well.
Advanced funding certainly can't hurt in situations where it's cash flow based, but
as,
yes.
As long as the advanced funding stays within the current period.
That's correct.
Budget period.
Right. I don't remember. There may have been an old discussion about the possibility of creating some sort of an emergency contingency fund. And we had actually, I think, made a decision, and I'd have to go back probably to 2005, that we weren't going to create a fund like that. And the primary reason was that if you have an emergency fund, there are always emergencies. And the other thought that we had was that the state of Illinois is the primary funder for most of the services, and now we've actually morphed into where Medicaid is the primary funder for services. And so to some degree, what we're doing is really to move the system forward at this point, and Medicaid is the responsible thing. So. And there is no way that we can create an emergency fund to make up for what the state doesn't pay.
I think that means that one of the most important activities that we can engage in, and this is what you were talking about earlier, is take advantage of the public comment opportunities related to Medicaid, because there are a lot of things going on with it, and when those public comment opportunities come up, they come up fast, and we might actually have the same thing to say every time. So we could prepare ourselves for those.
Just a quick comment on Medicaid. As if you look at what the state, where the state is making cuts, it's primarily in areas where Medicaid has a responsibility. The problem is that the rates aren't adequate, even though many people are in a situation where we actually, because of the Affordable Care Act expansion, people that came in under Affordable Care Act get 100% reimbursement from the feds for the services. So you would think, well, that's why wouldn't we provide the services if there's full reimbursement? Well, the problem still is that the system doesn't have the capacity to deal with everybody, and also the rates aren't adequate to really pay the providers. So you basically have a system that isn't working, and the state is fully relying on it at this point. So.
Bill?
Yeah.
Lynn, can you notify us of times when we could testify or ask questions? Because I don't receive any mailings about that. Thanks.
And we will have to put on our agenda trying to create some of those talking points and be ready for those things, because I think that's right. Even in an outline sense, there are a lot of things we can do that are almost permanent. And then create some shorter-term things as well. We've talked about this before. At some level, a few of us have to be willing to go to Springfield or other places on short notice to sit in front of the right kinds of people. Not an easy thing, but it's one of those things that we can do as community support folks. All right.
Phil, if
yes.
I may.
Sure.
In regards to activity at, the General Assembly, there is the mechanism to file a slip in support or opposition of particular legislation when hearings are held, and you can do that electronically. That's actually something that came up, that's come up at a few different points, but I think was mentioned at ACMI just last week, was a reminder of that. So.
At the same time, I think all of us have experienced, I think we've heard from some of our legislators, that it's really the family, the direct family interaction that seems to have the biggest impact. And we need to take advantage of that when our legislators are here in the area with their home office activities and so forth. And I think beginning to build that community up and being ready for those things certainly can help a lot. The electronic things are important, but the effective things are the direct personal interaction. Okay, at this point, I'd like to take a little bit of time. I see we're at our hour, and I hope it's okay to continue with everyone talking a little bit about our priorities pre-planning. We actually have a fairly well-established list of priorities. I had suggested interacting with a few of our committee members to look at a few things to add to that. In particular, I think one of the things that we've heard about repeatedly over the last year, and indeed heard a little bit about earlier during the agency information, is some of these quote-unquote hard cases. The really urgent things that come up that are sort of conventional methodologies don't seem to work very well on, and whether we can begin to create team activities or anything else that can start addressing some of those situations. I think we also have begun to understand that third-party case management is, I think, potentially very valuable. In again, helping this team-building kind of activity and looking across agencies and other support activities to see what else we can do. And then the whole issue of the long-term aspects associated with integration, and I'll remind you of the bullet points I like to raise for that, which is number one, to make sure we have high expectations. The biggest enemy, I think, in this circumstance is to have low expectations. You know, the higher we set our sights, the more likely it is that we'll actually achieve something that's drastically different. Housing, of course, we're trying to work on, but that's a never-ending kind of a battle. Transportation, we've touched on, and then long-term employment support. One of the problems, as we all know, is that the state agencies typically will offer roughly 90 days of rehab job type support, and that simply doesn't work for people in this community who need regular checks over essentially indefinite amounts of time. And as issues come up, they need help in adapting to those and other situations. It's always, you know, even when you have someone in our community who's in a community employment situation, you know, it's a house of cards. There's always some little thing that could go wrong and disrupt that. And to the extent that we don't have the long-term supports in place to deal with that, you know, it's a high-risk kind of endeavor. So, Peter, would you like to summarize some of the other past priorities that we're going to be trying to build on as well?
What we passed out just as sort of a base is the items that were approved last year, that was in November, and so I just pulled those out as, you know, kind of our starting point. Can I borrow this?
Sure.
Pass them all out. Of course, we cover all of the coordination of funding issues, but there's some things that overlay everything we do. The coordination of funding, the changes in rule and regulation and law, then the whole concept of trying to look at everything through the lens of integration and how the things that we fund actually support moving in that direction. And then we have a list of the areas that we've identified in the past. The person-centered planning is one of the areas, support of that, cultural and linguistic competence, employment services and supports, the workforce development and stability, comprehensive services for young children, flexible family support, adult day programming, and including social and community integration. And I would like to, as Lynn pointed out, when we negotiated the contract with DSC related to that program, we made it a two-year contract this year. And they went back to the table and identified integration goals for that program, and those were included as part of the as part of the package. So, you know, there really is an effort underway to look at how we can make integration part of our planning process. And I want to thank DSC for their for being so cooperative during the negotiation process and working with us on that. The self-advocacy and family support, again, you know, continuing to support self-advocates, and then also the inclusion and anti-stigma programs, the issues that deal with acceptance, respect, and community integration. Those are the main areas that really have driven where our funding has gone. And then Phil has added the new ideas that have come up related to the hard cases. The other stuff in here is some of the oversight things and the underserved populations, which we talked about. The lady last night who testified at the county board meeting talked about the rural issues, and obviously we need to always remember that we have a responsibility to everybody in this county, not just people that live in Champaign Urbana, which typically we do sometimes forget about the rural areas. So anyway, that's our base that we're starting from, and I think it's exciting that we're going to have this conversation. I guess this will be part of what we're going to be talking about during the retreat planning, and that's about all I have at this point.
Okay, before I open it up, because I do want some discussion on this, I wanted to mention that we may also want to put in some non-funding kind of activities. So, for example, transportation. I think that I'll intend to take it on myself to try and meet with the MTD and some other folks like that to try and see if we're on their radar. Of course, Lynn has been doing that already.
Those are the kind of things we can put into the 3-year plan.
Yep.
Instead of this is sort of the funding priorities.
Exactly, and that's why I'm saying it would be kind of a separate activity for, you know, we've already talked about maybe some of the legislative outreach. I think we want to work with folks other than our traditional providers. You know, we've already talked about business development and some of the things that will have to happen for community employment. And I think some of the direct personal involvement, we may want to have some of that, which of course won't be a funding kind of thing. So comments, anything from our board?
Looking at the things that we are going to be talking about, I heard third-party management being a good thing, and right above where I wrote that, I still have, it seems like there's always a roadblock to doing something a little bit different. When it comes to priorities for funding, I think we need to look at the fact that the state of Illinois, again, I mean, we're Medicaid-driven now. So that means that we can't supplement anything. And I think that a lot of the people in Champaign-Urbana and the county really felt that one of the things that we would be able to do as a board with the money that we get from the county for that would be to actually increase that funding. And we can't do it. I mean, it's like okay, well, we're gonna give money that we have, but we have to put these restrictions on them so that if we need more money for, let's say, a children's program, we can give them certain amounts of money, but we have to be certain that this little child and that little child, and then we get to adults, this person can't receive more funding because in this program because he's Medicaid driven. I know those are things that we as a board can't really change, but it does make funding a little bit more difficult. All the time, we're looking at restrictions on not only the Medicaid funding, but we're also looking at, can we fund a SILA in a particular way? Can we fund something else? And I know that that's not necessarily our purview, but it's getting discouraging. And I personally am getting very discouraged with it. That may be just my problem, which I'll have to work on. But again, you know, we came to this position thinking that we were going to be helping people in our county, and we are, I understand that, but I feel like I'm restricted in what I can do to help those folks. And that is so disappointing. So I don't know that there's anything that can be done other than spinning our wheels when it comes to talking to the state of Illinois, but I'm willing to spin. So, you know, this is something that I think we need to also take a look at. I think that there are people much smarter than I am who could figure out a way to get around some of this stuff, and perhaps they all work for the state. I don't know. But maybe we should hire one of those folks.
Well, I guess, you know, I want to just quickly comment. I mean, I get this bully pulpit, I guess. I want to be more optimistic because I think that one of the things about the whole Medicaid situation is that it prevents us as a board from watching those individual cases. In other words, we can't do anything about, you know, are these various children getting served and so forth. We just can't even go there. But on the other hand, there's a lot that we can do on the innovation side. You know, clearly getting a half a dozen businesses in Champaign County to become leaders in the employment first activity. You know, these are the kinds of things we can start advocating for. Trying out different business models of SILAs to see, you know, what are some directions we can go that could lead to significant expansion. What we can't do, and this is why I want to think of things differently, we can't do more of the same. You know, that's what we're prevented from doing in many ways. But we can do some things that are kind of different and off the radar, so to speak. Family advocacy, IEP assistance, you know, helping to nucleate community support groups, and of course working with our agencies on any new ideas they have that are outside the scope of many of the conventional funding mechanisms.
I do understand that. But when you're talking about new things, yes, we need to do lots of different things, and we do need to think differently. But at the same time, the people that we fund need the funding. So we have to look at ramifications of everything that we fund. I know that we do that. I just think that these new things that we need to do, some of them are not new. Some of them have been there for years, and we can't get them funded by the state. So, you know, but people felt that they were really important, and they wanted those different services, and so they advocated for them. And we do have some of them. But I do think that we get all of these different rules that come down from a state who clearly has shown that they don't really value any of that. And I'm disappointed. I'm older than you, and I've done this forever. So when I look at what we're still fighting to get, as far as service is concerned to people who really need that, it is so disappointing that we are still struggling with the very same things we struggled with when there were no services. So it really is something that, yeah, we need to look at different ways of doing things. But many of those different ways that we're thinking of at the moment, hey, those aren't new ideas. Those are ideas that have been around forever, and nobody wants to fund them. So, you know, what do we do now? Yes, I'm Debbie Downer today. I'm sorry.
All right. Other comments, Mike?
I'm not sure that I'm ready to do much with this because I'm conflicted between what our role as a board is, because I think we have to give guidance and support, and we have to do those things, but I don't think we can make demands because we fund agencies who provide services to clients. We can tell them the direction we'd like to go, but if they don't choose to go there and nobody decides to fund an idea of ours or nobody decides to provide that service, there's nothing we can do really and truly except maybe seek out somebody else. But our job is not to provide those services. Our job is to provide leadership and guidance and appropriate fiduciary responsibility over the funds that come to us. So I think when we get around to our retreat, I think that's going to be the exact time for us to have discussions about what is our goals as a board, what direction do we think we need to be going, what are our responsibilities, and what do we do? I mean, it's one thing for us to talk about everything we think that we'd like to have happen, but all the things we'd like to have happen cost money. And all that money right now is already being spent to serve clients. Unless we find new money, how do we find new things to do without taking services away from someone who families or individuals who need the services? It is a real headache to think about. And yet I know we have to do that. I don't think there's any doubt, but I'm looking forward to, at the retreat, having some much larger discussions where we have a longer timetable to do that rather than just in a monthly meeting. The concept I'm totally in favor of. I'm in favor of all that. I just don't know where we can go with it when everything I see that we want to do that's new is going to take away from what we're doing with someone who's already needing and receiving services. It's really frustrating. I understand what you people go through when you're trying to figure out what can I do with this dollar they've given me? How can I best take this dollar and spread it as far as I can and make it provide services? But well, that's it. I'm sorry. I'm rambling.
Well, and I think it is important not to put this together in such a way that we're, you know, imposing a lot of new requirements. And of course, Joyce is absolutely right that many of these ideas are not especially new. Some of them are untested and certainly underfunded. You know, obviously, community employment is not a new concept. Lynn, you had a comment?
I think some of the... I know I need to make it short, but some of the things that are listed as priorities are actually required now by the federal government. So maybe you can think of it a little bit differently, like you're investing in, and we can be creative about the Medicaid supplementation risk. And I mean, there are already some investments that are quite creative, like to allow the agencies to meet the federal requirements of Medicaid, but also to serve more people than just the Medicaid recipients. For example, person-centered planning is the law. It's not, that's also in the new regs, those set a floor. They're not aspirational like the settings regs. We don't have time to get there. It has to be happening. So the two major DD providers that you invest in the Mental Health Board invest in, both have switched their accreditation to CQL, and CQL has some really interesting tools that are absolutely person-centered, and I learned so much at the site visits last month about how DSC is using those tools to change the plans, to change the services, to change the culture of the agency. Those tools are actually helping them to be more aligned with the federal law, so on behalf of the people who receive Medicaid, but by serving people who don't have any funding, so that you support. So you have already made some investments with the priorities you have now in supporting the agencies, keeping them out of risk, but helping them to comply with the new regulations, which are quite heavy. So.
All right, thanks. Peter?
You know, Joyce, I was just going to say, I actually think these are very exciting times because we are actually improving the lives of people that have disabilities, and this is a civil rights issue. We have been violating people's civil rights in a number of ways, and everybody is aware of where the system is moving. I've had, you know, as I said, the conversations that we've had with our providers, with DSC, the work that we did on the DT program on making it more of an integrated approach. Everybody knows we've got to move in that direction, and I think it's very exciting that we are, you know, our role is to help the agencies make the changes and do what we can to support their efforts to make the changes. And I think that the changes that are being made are the right changes. I mean, we have to be moving in this direction. Not just because of the law, because it is the right thing to do, and everybody realizes that, and I think that we are doing a lot of things to support the agencies in moving in that direction, and so for that reason, I think it's very exciting, and I'm looking forward to the next few years because I think we're going to see we should be about improving the lives of people in this community.
I certainly have no qualms with that. I really want to do that. And I believe that we should be doing that. It's just disappointing that it takes so long.
Okay, I think another point I would make as we put up our priorities is that really behind this is a a spirit of team building and advocacy. Certainly, there's no intention here to be the least bit adversarial, and I think we do want to strengthen our community and the support base and the interactions that I think have been growing among our providers to do this more effectively. So I think that's in the spirit of that, we'll be beginning to put this together. Actually, I very much appreciate this kind of initial discussion, and obviously we're not making decisions at this point, but you know, it's good to have some of the concerns out on the table. So can we move on to some of the planning for our retreat then, please? And Peter or Lynn, I don't know which one of you is on the hook to give us a little bit of a review for the plan here.
Well, you had sent a number of ideas for presenters and topics that are of interest, and we've got commitments from almost everybody. I think you had wanted to learn about the hard cases from the past staff. So we have a commitment from the program manager and one of their staff to come and talk to us about that, maybe with numbers, hopefully. Chandra Somerville can give us information, but she's not available on the date. She was going to present with them, but she can't do that particular date. So hopefully we'll get some input from her about that piece. Melissa Picciola, and I've been saying it wrong, it's Picciola, not Picciola, has agreed to come and do a presentation on the state and federal changes. And we talk, she and I talk every couple of months, and really the focus has just been on the state lately because it's just unprecedented. So that may be, I mean, there's not infinite time for that. So if you want to hear about federal too, I think she can do both, but it's, you know, whatever you guys want to do with that, however you want to focus her time. She'll be here for the whole thing, even though she's just doing about a half hour, 45 minutes. Is that okay? I mean,
Remind us the time, the timing.
8:30.
8:30.
To noon. So there'll be some opening remarks and introductions.
And it's here? Mm-hmm. What's the location? Okay.
And we wanted to make sure there was an opportunity for public participation, probably after each topic, and then time for you to have exclusive, well, not exclusive, but like for you to talk and not public. So after every segment, you would have that. Is that
okay?
Does that sound
yes
appropriate? Okay. I think there was I think those are the main speakers, right? Melissa, and then, oh, no, Employment First. That's right. The other piece, the local Employment First efforts, and they're available too.
Okay, good. And is this the time in that agenda to work on this particular area that we're talking about here, where our goal is?
The priorities? Well, you have scheduled an October 21st regular meeting. If you want to keep that meeting, we could make it the focus of a regular board meeting instead. And then,
my question was, is there time in the retreat?
It's not really. I mean, it's kind of, those are the things that, it's hard cases, Employment First, I'm sorry, and responding to state and federal developments. So those are related to the priorities. There's not a specific agenda item.
Well, I think it's fair though to say that we need to structure that in such a way that the ending point is an open discussion of okay, how we take the information we've heard at the retreat and begin to structure into the priorities.
Okay.
Again, you know, this is not an action meeting. We won't be making final decisions on priorities at that point. Presumably that waits for November, but we should have that open discussion while it's all fresh in our minds. So the last 45 minutes or whatever it might be, right?
Do you want to not do the October 21st regular meeting and just put, I mean, because this is a week later, and it sounds like the focus is on the priorities, which is what you would do at October 21st meeting, but
You're killing me. I've been building my schedule around these meetings for
okay,
months.
No,
and then you cancel them, and I say, oh, here are all the things I was supposed to have been doing.
So
then
it
I
would be a good
out.
Start. So it's a, you know, so it's a brief
I
meeting,
I think we have,
start.
I'm sure we have enough to talk about in October that we should go ahead with that, and perhaps we begin to frame these a little bit more explicitly. It's there's no question that we wait for the guidance from the retreat.
Okay.
Okay, any other questions, issues related to the retreat? We've got the three topics we're trying to hit on. We're trying to get some discussion time for our priorities based on those, and some public discussion built in there as well. You know, it's tight in 3.5 hours. And I don't know whether the room is available a little bit longer than that, you know, whether we formally schedule until 12:30 or 1. Okay, well, I don't want to extend it to the whole day, but 1 p.m. is probably rational. Okay, yes, we're almost at 90 minutes here. I would like to open the floor for some discussion of integration transition successes. We've had that on our agenda. I know we have a little bit from DSC.
Good morning, Annette from DSC. I talk really fast, so that's good for this. We're really excited about a lot of the movement in the areas of Employment First. First of all, Michelle Petty has been hired as the Employment First LEAP coordinator. Please don't ask me to repeat that a second time. It's a mouthful. Our logo has been approved for the Partners for Employment. And again, that's the group of job developers from DSC and Community Choices who are working on training for businesses who are interested in becoming certified as disability aware businesses. So we have a logo that's been approved as of yesterday. The training curriculum is moving forward, and we have identified two businesses that we're calling our champions, and that's basically two businesses who we already work with who have already demonstrated that they're willing to make accommodations, that they've already embraced the person that they've hired. The champions and the logo are going to be unveiled at the Disability Expo coming up, so we're very excited about that. And then we are also in the process of identifying our first 20 businesses to provide this training for. Very energetic group. They're fun to work with, and they're hard to keep up with as well. So we're, again, moving forward with that. Tuesday, we're having our first family meeting. That will be for families of people in our day program. And our topics will be funding sources, LIGAS, upcoming changes they can look forward to, and then we'll be soliciting topics for future meetings, things that they would be interested in. Consultants, we've reached out to several. We have at least one more phone call next week with the consultant as we look at getting people to share their experiences with culture changes within their agencies. And I think that's it. Any questions?
Yeah, that's great. One comment. I hope, have we been in touch with a newspaper? Because as you know, every Sunday they have a column on businesses in the area and so forth. It would be incredible to have them be at the expo and perhaps highlight the program that we're talking about. I think that could be tremendous publicity for your champions.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
All right, any others? Yeah, Dale. What's the location on that? At DSC. Okay, thanks. Old business, let's get an update on the Disability Resource Expo. Thanks, Barb, for waiting around for us.
I'll make it quick. We are 3 weeks from tomorrow is the 9th annual expo, and things are coming together really nicely. I did submit a report. There is a little bit of a change here. We closed exhibitor registration and then we kind of reopened it again. We have 102 exhibitors registered and ready to go. I got 4 more inquiries yesterday, but we really had to cut it off because of the book. The resource book is going to the printer today. And let's see, I do want to point out there are posters and brochures. Please, please take these back to your agencies, organizations, meetings you're going to, anything at all where you can help us promote. We are in the promotional phase of this now and really have to get the word out. You've probably seen the MTD buses going around with the ads and some people's cars and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So we're doing basically anything and everything to get the word out right now. So any way you can help us. I have lots more of those in my car, so feel free to let me know if you need more. We bundled 12,000 school flyers yesterday. And those are going out to the schools this week. And we actually have to do another reprint because we need some more. So anyway, the schedule for the day is in the brochure. It's a nice entertainment lineup and you know, the Employment First Awards that we're gonna be doing and lots of good stuff. So please come, please join us. I think you'll, I did want to point out too, in 2007, when we first did our first expo, we had 53 exhibitors. So we've almost doubled in size, and that's pretty cool. Okay, any questions?
No questions, just so happy to hear that. That is such a good thing to end on, to actually hear something that's worked out so well. And I know how much work you all have put into it all these years. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Barb. That's really good to hear. It's good to hear that we have an exhibitor waiting list. Maybe that will help them understand the importance here.
I also need to mention there's some Spanish versions of the brochure over here as well.
Okay, the other item under old business is the meeting schedule, which is on page 28. I think the only substantive the minor change is we're going to try and get this room until 1 p.m. on the 28th of October, right? So we'll see how that is. And you'll notice that the next couple of pages kind of show the topic areas. And we'll be trying to make our decisions on priorities and three-year plan, of course, at that November meeting as we talked about. So that gives us some idea there. Anything else on schedule or other old business items? Okay, I want to move to board announcements. Let me go ahead and get to Gary.
Thank you, Phil. Dear Debbie Downer, if you want to get frustrated and depressed, sit on the nursing home board of directors and listen about Medicaid and state funding. There's going to be some openings, so. All right. We're at the county in the midst of a budget ongoing process. I think all we do over there is work on budget from the end of the fiscal year to the beginning of the next one. It appears that we're going to have to cut considerably in our budget. We're not quite sure what the property tax freeze will do. It appears that if there is one, and more likely will be one, it'll affect FY 17 and 18 more so than 16. We believe at this point in time. That may be good news, may not be good news. But it appears some of our other revenues are not holding up as well. Some of the sales tax areas are not doing as well, which may well indicate that the economy is not doing that well locally. It's hard to tell, but that's one of the first canary in the coal mines that we get is how those how those sales tax revenues are holding up. It appears that we're not going to be able to give our non-bargaining unit employees much in the way of a salary adjustment next year. We're in the midst of negotiating with our county administrator her next contract, which will start next year. So I would like to encourage the DDB and also the Mental Health Board to revisit their budget and to set to hold the non-bargaining, to hold the staff salaries, the increases, adjustments to staff salaries, to be the same as what our non-bargaining unit employees at the county will get. And I'd also like to encourage you to set the executive salary, director's salary increase to be essentially the same percentage that we're able to give Deb Busey. So at least take a look at those items. That's a suggestion. Right now you're budgeted for 3%. And again, I would encourage you to bring those salary adjustments in line with what over 400 other employees in this county are get. No, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that, because our non-bargaining unit employees are not that numerous. But our non-bargaining employees, I would encourage you, since none of your employees are bargaining unit, to hold their salaries in line with our non-bargaining unit employees, and the executive salaries, director salary, in line with Deb Busey's increase for next year. The other area I would encourage you to look at is to go back through all those line items within the Mental Health Board budget, which affects DDB very seriously, and try to squeeze as much out of those line items so that you can get as much out to programs, out to people at this time. I know everybody's under stress. So take a look at those budgets and try to squeeze those a bit and see if you can actually come up with some more money for programs. Beyond that, I appreciate, Phil, the time and ability to speak. Thank you.
I have one question. You're talking about non-bargaining unit employees. What's the bargaining unit employee raise going to be? How does that compare with?
I think we're still in the midst of that. In the past couple of years, it's been around 2%, but we're in the bargaining right now.
Okay, thank you.
All right, other board discussion announcements? All right, any other business or items from the group at this point? Hearing none, I'll take a motion to adjourn. Okay, those in favor can depart.
I want to stay.